This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I want to compliment your show on how fair and level-headed everything you guys talk about.
Who is this guy? He's saying what we've been saying forever.
Maybe what we need from a conservative standpoint is
The Mark Cox Morning Show.
I respect that. We don't agree.
Listen to both sides.
This,
let's get it on,
is The Mark Cox Morning Show.
How about that sunshine this morning? A beautiful Monday morning for you as you head out the door. Thanks for spending time with us here on the Mark Cox Morning Show. I'm Mark. That's Kim St. Ange, Ethan Bright in studio this morning. And we got Drew working out there on the desk. Just great, great morning. It's just perfect. I love these days when it's cool, 57, 58 degrees when you're out the door. It's going to be in the 80s this afternoon, and that's pretty cool stuff. Now, Ethan, I'm looking up here right now, and I see that Brian Kilmeade is live on Fox interviewing Pam Bondi. They're talking about this judge in Wisconsin. Can you pull that audio up for me there real quick?
Yep, hold on.
All right.
ICE, they make arrests in courtrooms all the time. It's because it's safe. A defendant has gone through security. They don't have a weapon. It's an easy arrest. No one's injured. But because she did this, she jeopardized the lives of law enforcement officers, even the defendant, by doing this. They had to have a chase down a street while victims of a crime were sitting in a courtroom.
Judge in jail?
Judge got arrested. She sure did.
So David Brooks, you know, the
yeah. So there, that's going on outside of the White House right now. The Attorney General being interviewed by Brian Kilmeade. Our Annie Fry is probably, oh, I don't know, I'd guess 50 feet from where this is happening right now, because she's in the press briefing room, which is just down the path from where they're set up here for these network shots in the morning with the portico in the background. And she's going to be able to attend live the press briefing that is scheduled for about 7:30 our time. 8:30 Eastern in the White House press briefing room, and that's going to include Caroline Leavitt, their daily press briefing, and Tom Holman is going to be in there as well. No doubt this judge thing is going to come up as he talks about their crackdown on illegal immigration. And the big story today, if you're just waking up on a Monday morning and tuning back into the news cycle, is the fact that the media has now latched onto the fact that a couple of illegal alien mothers were deported, and along with them went their anchor babies. And now they're trying to make it seem like the Trump administration is radically deporting U.S. citizens to foreign countries, which is not the case. The mothers had legal deportation orders, and they chose to take their children with them, as I think most mothers would.
Mm-hmm.
Am I speaking out of turn there, Kim?
No, that's correct.
If you were in a foreign country, your baby happened to have been born there, but they tell you they're deporting you. Are you leaving your kid behind?
Yeah, I don't think a good mother would leave their child behind unless
either.
There was like a family member that, even then, you'd probably still want your baby with you.
So when you read the headlines this morning that the U.S. is deporting American citizens, it's hogwash. It's fake news, just so you know that. And I'm sure that'll be talked about in the press briefing this morning. Annie is there. We just heard from her a little bit last hour. If you want to hit the rewind button on the Odyssey app, or we'll have it posted up for you. You can hear her comments. She's going to be in the press briefing room and have some extra access in there today, maybe to ask a question. question. We'll be listening here at the bottom of the hour and see if she gets a chance to do that. Now, those things don't start usually on time, but if they do, the questions don't come till a little further along in the process. So hopefully we can tune in and hear a little bit of that once it gets underway. We'll take you out there. Coming up, we are going to talk about a couple of interesting issues, I thought, not the least of which is the fact that did you know, Kim St. Ange, that 50% of parents are still financially supporting their adult children?
What do we consider adult children? Is there
an age? Would seem 21, right?
But I mean, to what extent? Are these children 18, 40 years old and they're still supporting their 40-year-old children?
My guess is it's a combination of that, but some of them are, you know, the Bernie Sanders supporters that are still living in mom and dad's basement, and some of them are in their early 20s and just not making enough money to move out and get an apartment somewhere.
I can understand it to an extent if you just graduated college, right, or waiting to get a job, but at some point,
but half,
you gotta go, and that's what you have, the conversation you have to have.
Yeah, so
to make an income,
we're gonna cover that in the next segment here. We got Tom Graffio is going to join us. He's been a financial planner for a long time, and he's been looking at this study to see who it is still living with mom and dad these days and what the average age is. I'll be interested to hear that. At the bottom of the hour, we'll check in with Ashley Smith Thomas. She's been covering this. You know, we've been talking about the judge in Wisconsin. There's another case, of course, down in New Mexico, where they found the illegals living in the garage or the guest house. We're going to talk to her about that story as well at about 7:35. But right now, Ethan, let's get to our top stories, please.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
There are 18 important trading partners, and we have a process in place over the next 90 days to negotiate with them. Some of those are moving along very well, especially with the Asian countries.
Yeah, Scott Bessent did a great job this weekend, because the folks at ABC News did not, and Kristen Welker as well, did not want him to be able to have any success stories on trade, because tariffs are bad, period, if you're in the mainstream media. And that's clearly already having a huge impact on them with America's trading partners.
Make sure that you're not trying to arrest and deport students that are on campus trying to exercise their First Amendment rights. Make sure that you're not having my grandmother killed because you're trying to cut Social Security.
It is such an old talking point. The Democrats just pull it out and dust it off and lie about cuts to Social Security killing your grandma. It's as old as the day is long, it seems like. And there's another one speaking out this weekend. Let him speak.
We got the most secure border in the history of this nation thanks to President Trump's out-of-the-box thinking. He's a game changer. I said on day one, he proves to me every day why he's the greatest president in my lifetime.
That guy is going to be at the White House press podium in about 15 or 20 minutes here during the morning press briefing, which is where I mentioned Annie Fry will be in a few minutes. It'll be interesting to see hear his comments this morning on the arrest of these judges.
Say that law enforcement here, just going based off of what is in the criminal complaint and assuming that is accurate for these purposes, they notified the court personnel of their presence and plan. They stated their intention to arrest this man after the court proceeding was done in a public hallway. That's a public space. In my experience as a prosecutor under the Obama administration, Trump administration, and Biden administration, arrests could take place of criminal defendants in the courthouse in public spaces.
That is Christy Greenberg. She is a former federal prosecutor. She worked for the Obama administration. She worked during the first Trump administration. She worked during the Biden administration. She's no longer a federal prosecutor, but she was commenting on MSNBC yesterday about this arrest of the Wisconsin judge. I thought her comments were interesting because she's like, they didn't do anything wrong. Now, do I agree with the manner in which they had to march her out publicly and put her in a police car and all this stuff? No, but they were fully within their right. And the MSNBC anchor couldn't believe that this woman was defending the arrest of a liberal judge.
That's because they're not armed where they're in those spaces, and it's for officer safety. And I think there were a number of issues that were raised by this complaint where Judge Dugan really did things that she shouldn't have done. She was told, she told one of the law enforcement agents who was in a public space that he needed to leave the courthouse. There wasn't an authority to do that. She told them that he didn't have an effective warrant to conduct an arrest. That was also wrong. He did.
Yeah, she was completely in the wrong here. And now the left wants her to be slapped on the wrist, and they think it's humiliating the manner in which she was handled. First of all, she's not a federal judge. She's a local municipal judge there in Wisconsin. Secondly, when you compare this to how many other people have been treated, including people praying outside abortion clinics who have their door kicked in by heavily armed agents, or Roger Stone, whose house is raided live on CNN at 6 in the morning while his wife's standing outside, forced to stand outside in a robe. Or maybe Mar-a-Lago being raided. These are all situations of overreach by the government. This is not. This was a slap in the face by somebody who's sworn to defend the Constitution, and she didn't do it. So I don't even want to hear those comparisons. All right, we're going to get to a break here, because on the other side, we'll find out who the 50% of parents are in this country who are still supporting adult children long after they probably should be. We'll be back in just a minute. So, you know, I know this conjures up images of, you know, somebody sitting in their mom's basement playing video games and eating potato chips at 2 in the morning when you hear that a large percentage of parents are still supporting adult children. But I think that maybe that's not always the case. Maybe it's a fact that the kids have maybe have moved out, but expenses are more than they expected, and occasionally they're still coming to mom and dad and asking for help. We've got Tom Graffio on the phone with us this morning. He is, among other things, a certified financial planner, founder of Dove Investment Research and Management. Tom, welcome to the show.
Mark, it's an absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Well, thank you for giving us a minute this morning. You know, the number is what shocked me, that half of Americans are still supporting adult children.
That's true. So let's put that in numbers. That's about 60 million adult parents are supporting their kids. 60 million. And this number is staggering, that it's close to $1,400 per month. So that's much more than just keeping them on your, you know, cell phone plan and having the family plan. It's a lot more than that.
I have so many questions. So first of all, do we know ages? Like, are we talking like 20-year-olds or are we talking 40-year-olds? And the other question I would have, when you're talking about that figure, $1,400 a month, I mean, that's significant. I initially thought this was maybe someone who switched career paths and they were trying to figure things out, so they moved back in with their mom and dad temporarily. But it almost sounds like, no, maybe they're still living on their own in an apartment and the parents are just paying for the you know, every month they're paying the rent.
It is across the board. It could be rent, it's food, it's a variety of things. So, yes, it's much more than just, you know, basics. And yes, it is a very real trend. And it is. Last week I had it in my office. I had an 84-year-old woman, and I'm like, what are you doing still working? And come to find out that she's living with her 32-year-old grandson, and they're trying to make it work. And I'm like, looking at the grandson, you've got to go out there and get a better job and get a second and third job, because your 84-year-old mom needs to stop working. Okay, so yeah. It is a real issue.
Well, you know, I briefly worked in the financial services realm, Tom, and I know that you're dealing with people all the time trying to help them prepare for retirement. But my guess is most of these people didn't look at their retirement expenses and add in $1,400 a month for a child still being supported.
The impact on it is really significant, Mark. I mean, when we take that $1,400 and whatever it is in each family, right, because it was a case-by-case situation when we work with people on financial plans, parents know they need a financial plan and they want to retire. And when we take that $1,400 a month or whatever the number is, apply it to their retirement, and they find out, you mean I can retire 5 years earlier, 8 years earlier?
Right.
The wheels start spinning. So, yes, absolutely, it's a real thing. And the hardest thing for the parents often is, like, beginning the conversation, like, how do we stop? How do we stop? And sometimes I'm like, blame me. You know, I'll take the heat. Blame me. And that, even like last week when I said, bring your grandson in. Let's have a conversation.
Yeah.
Is there ever an acceptable circumstance where you feel like you would say it's justified for parents to be supporting their adult children?
I think there certainly is. Look, if there's a tragic accident or if there's some sort of health event or medical issue or something like that, yeah, sure. I mean, they're family, right? But even if you start in that situation, Kim, you got to start with, you know, and I tell this to everyone, okay, set time frames. Mm-hmm. Great. We'll help you for 3 months. We'll help you for 6 months. The problem is your heart is loving towards your kids, and you want to start and you want to help them, and you can help them. Like, I can do this for a while. You think as a parent, like, I'm going to do this for a while. The kids sometimes think, this problem is solved. I don't have to deal with this anymore.
that's very true. Yeah, I mean, you can buy long-term care insurance. You can't buy long-term kid insurance, right?
Well, if I'd be a top salesman, I think I'd do that really, if I could find it. Yeah.
no kidding. Tom, we appreciate your time this morning, my friend. Thank you.
Mark and Kim, thanks for letting me share some time with you. Have a great day.
Absolutely. Yeah, interesting conversation and an uncomfortable one if you've got to have that conversation with your adult child. Everybody needs help occasionally. And I get that.
I mean, I
don't think anybody, but this clearly speaks to a bigger problem.
When I lost my job at KMOV, I wasn't able to afford rent. I didn't know how long it would take me to get a job.
Right.
So I ended up moving in with my parents. So I would have been in my really early 30s at that point when I moved in with my parents. I was there for about 6 or 7 months because I got engaged shortly after, and my husband and I decided not to live together until we were married. So as soon as we got married, I moved in. But I mean, yeah, my parents supported me. I wasn't paying rent or anything. I would help around the house and stuff, but you know, that was huge for me. But it was also, I think there's an understanding in my family where we know we're all...
You got family. You got to have family, right?
But my parents also know I'm driven and I'll figure it out. And then I'm not just, I hate to use the word leech, but I'm not a leech. And I'm not just going to expect that this is an indefinite thing where, oh, mom and dad, you're going to help me forever.
Right.
But I mean, now like that time was amazing. I can't imagine not having that time with him now.
That's a good point. And they were thankful that Michael came along when he did.
Probably that too. That's right. I got out of their basement.
I'm just kidding you.
No, that's probably fair.
You know I'm just kidding you. That's great. Hey, tell you what. Coming up, we're going to talk to Ashley Smith-Thomas about the arrest of that illegal down in New Mexico who happened to be living in like the pool house of a judge or a former judge down there. My guess is Tom Homan's going to be talking about that. They're getting ready to have a press briefing in the White House here in a few minutes. We'll dip into that, too, as we can. Our Annie Fry's there on site this morning covering the 100 days for President Donald Trump. We'll be right back.
For the future. Today, we kick off 100-day week with a focus on the president's historic effort to secure our southern border. Later this afternoon, President Trump will sign an executive order on law and order and another executive order on sanctuary cities. The first EO will strengthen and unleash America's law enforcement to pursue criminals and protect innocent citizens. The second EO is centered around protecting American communities from criminal aliens, and it will direct the Attorney General and Secretary of Homeland Security to publish a list of state and local jurisdictions that obstruct the enforcement of federal immigration
laws. All right, that is Caroline Levitt live at the White House right now. They've just started their press briefing talking about a couple of EOs there that are going to be coming up. Maybe they'll have one that talks about judges that violate their oath and protect criminals over American U.S. citizens and defy ICE, because we've seen a couple of cases of that. Of course, our Annie Fry is actually in that press briefing right now. I don't know if she's going to get to ask a question here at some point, but we'll dip back into it in just a few minutes. Right now, we have Ashley Smith-Thomas with us this morning, a political strategist, founder and CEO of Freedom Fund USA. Ashley, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, now that we've seen two different judges get in trouble for using their personal home or their courtroom to protect illegals, what is going on in this country? And isn't it refreshing that we're finally seeing a crackdown on that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really disheartening to see this, because when you look at the role of a judge and the importance of the responsibility the moment they put on that black robe, to then see them trying to help an illegal escape and evade ICE using the jury exit, which is prohibited, is really unfortunate. And when you have a judge that was using his property to harbor illegal immigrants, let alone an alleged TDA, Trinidad Agua, a gang member, which according to President Trump's day one executive order, TDA is designated a terrorist organization. So now you can say that this judge was harboring a terrorist. I mean, it is really unfortunate, again, that this is happening. But it is refreshing to see that we have a president and a DOJ that is working aggressively to uphold the rule of law, because no one is above the law. And so, and that includes these judges. And so what is really interesting to see is how the DOJ is handling the situation, that they have evidence of the, particularly this magistrate judge out of New Mexico. They have the evidence of evidence tampering and how he was harboring these illegals. I'm just glad to see that we're starting to see accountability. And to me, I think that is one of the things that President Trump had said, even when he launched his second, or excuse me, his campaign for his the third campaign for president, he made it very clear that his job was to restore law and order and safe streets in America. And so that is what we're seeing by holding these judges accountable. We are seeing the restoration of law and order here in our country.
Ashley, I don't know if you'd know the answer to this question, but I know, for example, the New Mexico judge resigned. We don't know what will happen to this Wisconsin judge. Do you know at what point that she could be essentially pulled from the bench and saying you no longer are qualified to be in this role given the circumstances?
That's such a great question. So according to reports, particularly this judge in Wisconsin, I don't have an answer pertaining to her stepping down. But what is interesting is that she could face up to 6 years in prison for helping this criminal alien evade ICE. And so that in itself, she could be seeking prison time. And she's being charged with obstruction of proceedings before a department or agency of the United States and concealing a person to prevent arrest. So it's not going to go well for her. When you look at this judge in New Mexico and his wife, I mean, when you actually read the stories and the reports that's coming out about this, it's just twisted, in my opinion, because why would you, you know, destroy evidence? And again, why are you harboring illegals and a terrorist on your property? But more, you know, when you look at this, it's looking like they could actually, Judge Cano and his wife, could face up to 15 years in prison.
Wow.
So it's not going to go well for him either. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here in the coming days, what more will be revealed about these judges.
Well, it's, you know, it's also, they could be making an example of these two to try to warn other judges who might feel this way, that they have this power, to let them know you don't, and we'll come after you if you do this.
Absolutely. And I think that this is something that the DOJ is doing, is using these two as an example by showing extreme force. But also, Pam Bondi said in a message on Friday, quote, "The rule of law is very simple. It doesn't matter what line of work you're in. If you break the law, we will follow the facts and we will prosecute you." Hmm. And that is exactly what is happening here. And so they're making it very known that they will hold judges accountable who are breaking the law. And again, it's about upholding the rule of law. And so it's sad to see that these judges are doing this. However, I'm glad to see that we're seeing the DOJ hold these judges accountable. I would not be surprised if in the coming days, if we see more judges being arrested, just given the fact that we have seen such, in my opinion, an increase of activist judges. So for us to hold them accountable and get the politics out of the way and prevent these judges from moving forward with breaking the law, hopefully by using these two as an example, these judges will change their mind and change their ways. But I would not be surprised if we saw more judges arrested here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, very good. Ashley, we appreciate your time as always. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Ashley Smith Thomas there, president of the Freedom Fund USA, and good to get her thoughts on that. Tom Homan has just started speaking at this news conference at the White House press briefing room. Let's dip into that. Ethan, please.
To secure the border, because they understood national security was important. Joe Biden was the first president in the history of this nation who came in office and unsecured a border on purpose. That's just a fact. We handed the Biden administration, after President Trump's first administration, we handed the Biden administration the most secure border in my lifetime, and he unsecured it on purpose. Now, President Trump and this administration here, their success is unprecedented. We beat Trump's first administration on border success. Border numbers are historic low. Today, as I'm standing here, we have the most secure border in the history of this nation. And the numbers prove it. President Trump's policies are saving lives every day. There's been studies done that says 31% of women that make that journey through use of cartels get sexually assaulted. When President Trump has illegal immigration down 96%, when 96% less people are coming, how many women aren't being sexually assaulted by the cartels? How many children aren't dying making that journey? How many women and children aren't being sex trafficked into this nation? How many known suspected terrorists aren't making it into this country? How many pounds of fentanyl isn't getting into this country to kill young Americans? How many women and children aren't sex trafficked? Under Joe Biden, sex trafficking is up 600%. We had 4,000 aliens dying making that journey. We had 250,000 Americans dead from fentanyl that came across an open border. President Trump's policy saves lives every day. Even the border wall saves lives. And people want to hate on the border wall. Every place a border barrier has been built, illegal migrations decline, illegal drug flows decline. But you know what no one talks about? The border wall saves lives. Because the most vulnerable, the women and children, can't get over that wall, which means they're going to a place where there's not a wall. And what's waiting on them? The men and women of the United States Border Patrol, who will take care of those humanitarian needs, the health needs right off the bat. We just want the numbers. Let me talk about a few numbers that are important to me.
All right. So Tom Homan there speaking this morning, highlighting the border success during the president's first 100 days. I'm sure that's going to be the focus of the press briefing today and tomorrow. Tomorrow actually is the 100th day. And we saw as they were getting ready for this, they had a wide shot of the room. You could see Annie standing there along the left side of the wall. I remember being in there during Trump's first term. I got to go and had to stand in the back or back left side of the room. It's a tiny room. TV cameras dominate the back with these feeds. And then they've got a row of chairs. I don't know. It may seat 70 people, top 60 people maybe. But it's just a tiny little room. We'd be anxious to hear Annie's take on having been there, because it's pretty awesome to be in that room, because not many Americans get the chance to do that. So that's pretty cool to be there. Maybe Annie will get to ask a question this morning.
I hope so. She said it was going to be something about, well, Governor Pritzker and the pushback that he's given the Trump administration and kind of pounding his chest and saying, I'm not going to comply and make it easy for you. What implications does that have? And he's not the only one doing this, but Pritzker just...
You'd think he could at least share some food. I mean,
hey,
something.
I could go for some food.
I'm just saying. I that's what I think. Kim, what are we talking about coming up on Kim on a Whim?
I want to talk about this whole situation out of Vancouver, that really, really sad situation where there was this festival going on, a Filipino festival. Guy drives the car into the group. 11 people are killed. Dozens more injured. Well, now new information is coming out about the background of this guy, and it just opens up. We need to have a bigger conversation about what's going on here.
All right. That's when we come back. Stay tuned.
This is the Mark Cox Morning Show. Kim on a Whim.
This whole situation out of Vancouver is really sad. On Saturday, where they're saying a man who is mentally unstable drove through a crowd during a Filipino festival and ended up killing 11 people and injuring dozens of others. Now, what's come out since then is they're saying this guy, whose name, by the way, is Kai G. Adam Lowe. I'm probably not saying his name correctly, but he's 30 years old. And they're saying he was known to law enforcement and mental health care professionals before this attack. and that he supposedly was suffering from delusions, paranoia. And at this point, because of that, the history of mental illness, investigators don't believe this was terror related. So to me, that makes it seem like he wasn't going in there with the intention of killing all these people, that he had some delusion that led him to do what he did.
Or they don't think he was acting as a terrorist on behalf of some group, but he clearly terrorized these people. You know, I'm just trying to think out loud here for a moment. Mental health is the number one driver in every single one of these situations, mm-hmm. just about. Even if they classify it as a hate crime, to take a weapon, to take a gun, to take a knife, to take a car, to injure other people, you're mentally ill if you do that. You right. have a mental situation. In this country, we struggle with how to deal with that situation. We have no good laws for dealing with that, to preemptively take these people off the street or institutionalize them or whatever. If you think it's bad here, can you imagine how bad it must be in liberal Canada? Like, they knew this guy was nuts. They admit in this article he had multiple run-ins with authorities who knew he had mental challenges. They knew he was struggling with the death of his brother a year ago, yep. all these other problems, and yet he was still out running around where he could take a car and drive it into this festival mm-hmm. and kill all these people. I'm waiting now for the Prime Minister of Canada to announce that they're going to have a ban on cars because they ban guns up there, so they might as well have a ban
right.
on cars.
The car is clearly the weapon. That's
clearly,
the problem.
It's the weapon is the problem.
So with mental illness, like, for example, if somebody's struggling with alcoholism, they have to be willing to check themselves into a rehab center, right? You can't go on their behalf and say, hey, I'm checking in my loved one because they're struggling with alcoholism.
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I would assume that in extreme cases, like a court or something could do that.
But that would be the only circumstances.
You would have
to go through a court-ordered mandate, basically, because I would think it's the same with mental illness. And I'm not saying that you want to be dragged in against your will to one of these facilities, but I don't know what the balance is. I don't know what the solution is here when someone is clearly struggling with mental illness. He has a known history of it. And you're just it's like a ticking time bomb. Like, you're just waiting for something to happen. And I know plenty of people listening probably have family members who struggle with mental illness. We all probably know someone who struggles with this. And it is sad because there certainly is a stigma. And, you know, you don't want to be the one to say that you've struggled with this in the past.
Right.
I get that. And maybe it would even disqualify you from a number of things. But something has to be done about this. And heck, it's getting scarier now. Not that I'd be, you know, too terrified to go to an outdoor festival. But I think about what happened, was it New Year's Eve, New Year's Day in New Orleans, where the crazy guy drove through the barricades and plowed through a bunch of people. Now you have this going on in Vancouver. It's like, do you have like police standing there? I'm not sure that would even really help because they just drive right through the officers.
Yeah. And those are situations where you have the same festival that takes place every year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're very high profile, like the one in New Orleans. Maybe less so with this one. I don't know nothing about street festivals in Vancouver. Maybe they do this all the time. But if you're a law enforcement officer there, you're in charge of, you almost have to now consider whether or not to take a couple of vehicles and block off access, including sidewalks, leading up to these festivals, mm-hmm. because you just don't know.
Right.
Right.
Because remember, they had the barricade things in New Orleans, but either they weren't functioning properly
right.
or whatever. And the guy didn't care. He just drove right through them.
It's true.
We need to do something.
No doubt. Coming up, we'll check in with Jesse Jane Duff, get her thoughts on this news conference that's happening up in D.C., where our Annie Fry is in attendance today. We'll get a full report from her a little later, I'm sure. Also, Tom Ackerman on the Blues' big victory this weekend. We're back in just a minute.